This episode is brought to you by Rockstar Energy Drink. Be honest, are you procrastinating by listening to this podcast? It's okay. You just need Rockstar Focus. Choose from three delicious flavors, each crafted with ingredients for an ideal energy and mental boost, like Lion's Mane, 200 milligrams of caffeine, and zero sugar. Visit rockstarenergy.com to learn more. At least 75 milligrams of caffeine has been shown to help improve attention.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Welcome to the first episode of Series 3 of Who Are You Wearing? I'm Kira Pritchard-McLean. I am a stand-up comedian that loves clothes, and I love chatting to people who also love them. I just think clothes are a way of sort of telling the world about ourselves, and it's a way of constructing who we want the world to see when they look at us. So, a couple of years ago, I decided to start a podcast where I chat to some very stylish people. That's what you're listening to right now. Welcome aboard. Thank you so much for joining us. Oh, it's been a while. I realise it's been a hot minute since the last series, but to be fair, my amazing producer Joe has recorded all these absolutely ages ago. They've just been sat there. We've just been busy bees. Bees being short for bitches. We've been busy bitches. But I also think as it gets cold and the nights are drawing in, it's the perfect time to get into a new podcast. So welcome back, people who listen. Thank you so much to everyone who comes up after gigs and says they love the podcast. I really appreciate that. And yeah, if you're new, it's a lovely space. Wipe your feet as you come in. Now, I'm starting really strong with this series. My first guest is someone who has genuinely been on my bucket list of interviewees since I started the podcast. Guys, it's Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen. How exciting is that? I want to dedicate this episode actually to Evie, who emailed in May, I think, of 2022 and says, I love the podcast. I just wanted to recommend interviewing Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen for the next series. I love his style and I want to know his fashion backstory. Well, Evie, this is an exclusive for you. Oh, by the way, if you want to get in contact with us, you absolutely can. You can follow us on Who Are You Wearing Pod on Insta. Or if you want to have a proper score, you want to write something a little bit longer, you want to tell us how great the podcast is, share a story that's brought to your mind about it and your journey with fashion, you can email us at whoyouwearingpod@gmail.com. We always love a chat. Now, he records this episode, it's February of 2023 when we chat. He's sat in his kitchen in his Cotswold home, which is exactly what you want from him, isn't it? He's also impeccably dressed for the whole thing and masses of fun. Oh, the guy is pure charisma and just, I love people I work with who like just get it and get what this daft industry is. And he just, you know what, he gave me some new perspective actually and managed to alter my view on getting abused on Twitter. No mean feat. I defy you not to pop on some velvet after this episode. It is a riotous exploration of being extra. I'm going to stop chatting and I'm going to let you enjoy me asking Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen, who are you wearing?
I grew up in a very haute bourgeois, straightforward environment. My childhood, even though my childhood was actually the 60s, but it felt like a Lady Bird book from the late 1940s. It had been styled in a very understated way. And all the photographs of me when I was a child, I always wore shorts and a bow tie. I think the bow tie was a reference to the fact my father was a surgeon, quite a kind of an eminent surgeon, and he used to take great delight in the grand guignol of the fact that he could never wear a tie, because because it might trail in the blood of the wounds. So you always wore a bow tie, which, you know, I think that was a way of sort of, you know, building his part slightly. But I obviously rebelled on that very, very early on, because although I don't remember this moment, it became a big part of family folklore, which was that I used to start assembling my own outfits. And I had a grandmother who was a very, very talented seamstress. And she used to make completely miniaturized versions of particular uniforms, you know, sort of like, you know, like Grenadier Guards, well, Welsh Guards and, you know, bits and pieces and stuff like that. But I left to my own devices. I would be bringing in all sorts of different bits from different elements and a bit of dressing up box. And I must have been quite young. I must have probably been about 4 or 5. And I was taken for a walk by my new nanny, who is described in the family folklore at this point as something of a dolly bird. My mother claimed she was, it's the first time she ever saw a micro mini on anyone. And she was taking me for a walk and came back and was saying, that's the last time I take Lawrence for a walk. Look at him. And everyone looked at me, and I did look absolutely extraordinary. But this girl was saying that everywhere we went, lorry drivers kept beeping their horns at me. But my mother felt it was probably the micro mini that was causing the fuss. I got unfairly blamed.
So did you have a strong sense of style as a kid then? What's a typical look for a little Lawrence?
Well, I actually think that all children do. You know, now I've got 3 grandchildren. I mean, as children, we have an incredibly focused sense of visual appreciation, which I think is knocked out of people by appalling things like science, engineering, maths, all that kind of shit. But actually, every child is born drawing, every child is born designing, every child wants to change their bedroom, every child wants to create their own outfits. All of these things are, you know, sort of abraded away from your soul. There are plenty of photographs of me. It often would start with a pair of shorts and a bow tie, but then there would be a centurion's helmet, a little reference possibly to a toga, something going on. Maybe, you know, there'd be a kilt on top of the shorts. I don't know. It's wherever it went, really. William Hunt, who used to do my clothes for years and years and years and years and years, always said that I had balls of brass, that he literally, of all his clients, he would be... And I always used to feel sorry for him, because certainly back in the noughties, the worst dress lists in London definitely were headed either by me or Jonathan Ross, and both of us were dressed by William Hunt. So, you know, but I think William never minded. You know, William liked the dark side like that. Loved the gritty northernness of it all. It's what's called a disruptor these days, I think.
Of course, yes, a disruptor. Yes, there'd be a keynote speech. Who was dressing you? Were you putting this all together yourself, or were you influenced by older siblings or by family? Or were you given a lot of freedom?
Oh, I was dressing myself. No, I was given a lot. I mean, there were plenty of kind of moments where I had to be, back then, you know, consultants, families were always dragged around wards and stuff like that on Saturdays and, you know, Christmas and high days and holidays. So that was the point where I had to play it straight. That's the point where I had to go in mufti. But in fact, my mother was obviously very indulgent of all of this. My father died when he was very young. I was very young. I can't think he was that happy about it, actually. But certainly my mother, who was a bit of a disruptor herself, I think rather liked the fact that, within all this kind of suburban rectitude, there was this mad as fuck kid that is definitely ploughing their own furrow.
Do you know what I think about you and Jonathan, who I've had on this podcast, is that you are, I think, a big influence on people like my partner, and now with what's happening in terms of gender non-conforming people, but who aren't afraid to be glamorous and flamboyant. Mm. And then what happened in a larger conversation, the culture, is then immediately their sexuality was questioned. But like,
yeah,
you and Jonathan, two of the straightest men I've ever seen or encountered. And I wondered if that was a story that had started quite young.
Oh, God. I mean, yeah, I think my mother was always rather surprised that I wasn't gay. Her favourite joke was, my mother made me a homosexual. Oh, that's nice. If I got her the wool, would she make one for me as well? In a way, I think she was sort of, that was a kind of a coded thing, you know. It's like, if you are a homosexual, can I get the credit? But no, I mean, I've never understood. I've absolutely never, ever, ever understood it at all. Because, you know, culturally, historically... you know, flamboyant dressing men, you know, from Henry VIII to the Earl of Essex to Lorenzo de' Medici to, you know, everyone you can just about think of, Byron, Brummel. Well, actually, both of them had all sorts of assignations with the gender. But, you know, generally speaking, Chopin, I mean, you know, generally speaking, that there is a very strong link between happy heterosexuals who actually are, you know, like to show off.
Were you ever made to wear anything that you hated?
No, because again, I'm not a very passive person. I mean, there've been plenty of shoots. Generally speaking, I won't let anyone style me. I'll you know, take my, you know, it's, to me, you wear your own clothes. I mean, you know, I remember once doing a big advertising shoot, and I took went on for days and days and days, and the whole point was we were doing all these different adverts, and I took a whole load of different suits, and the stylist had done this really bizarre thing, which was she then decided to mix it all up a bit and put the purple waistcoat from the purple three-piece suit with the orange trousers, you know, basically make me look like the Joker, and I just went, absolutely fucking no way. You know, what I wear is, in fact, incredibly carefully calibrated, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I don't care whether anyone likes it or not, because it's calibrated for me. As far as I'm concerned, it deeply doesn't work if, you know, it's sort of mucked around with like that, if it's tweaked like that. Poor thing. I mean, I felt rather sorry for it. I absolutely never, ever, I can never remember a moment where I walked into a room or walked into a classroom or did this or did that where anyone said anything other than, oh my God, well, you know, well, that's weird, but okay. There was a sort of an acceptance of it, which I always thought was very grown up of the planet. The only time I ever, ever, ever got into trouble, I was in a pub in Dulwich and I was wearing an army surplus rubber Mac. And I think some kind of capish thing. This is like, this is very Blitz, you know, early 80s. And I was aware of the fact that you sort of make a bit of a fuss when you walk in. And there was a little knot of skinheads. And after a while, one of them started sort of, you know, I could hear him making, you know, all sorts of comments and stuff like that. And then, I don't know why I went outside, but I went outside and he followed me. And he became very aggressive. And then he started punching me in the stomach really, really hard. Now, the thing is, this rubber Mac was basically a bat cape. And, you know, within... I mean, he literally absolutely exhausted himself just punching and punching and punching and punching and punching. And I began to feel really quite sorry for him because it just wasn't happening. It wasn't going anywhere. And then he just sort of started running out of steam. And then we started talking about the fact that I used to go out with his sister Claire. And it was just one of the most sort of bizarre, but in many ways kind of straightforward experiences, which is, you know, kind of tribe behaviour, you know. And I, you know, I think he then said, oh, I really, you know, went up to him and said, I really showed him a lesson. I thought it was gentlemanly to not cross him on that one, you know. I just sort of went back to my lot, you know. It's little small victories. I had something similar relatively recently. I got on a train and it was very, very busy. It was really crowded, and I was sort of moving up the train, and there was a guy sitting down. And I thought that's a bit, you know, weird, because there were a lot of ladies and he was still sitting and stuff like that, and he was frantically on his telephone. And as each stop happened, I got closer and closer and closer to him until I was literally standing behind him. And I just looked down kind of quite casually and saw him tweeting, that fucking bastard Llewellyn Bones just got on my train. I'm going to have him. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to take him into the loo and I'm going to beat the crap out of him. And, you know, all of this kind of stuff is really terribly aggressive. And I think there was this horrible moment as he was sort of typing away, there was like horrible moment where he could feel my breath on the back of his neck, and he realised that I could see absolutely everything that he was typing. And, you know, and again, I actually felt quite beatific. I felt quite just sort of like, well, okay, I mean, if that's sort of making you feel better about your world. He was a funny little thing, you know. If actually the you that you have generated, this avatar that you've generated on social media, is someone that takes me into a dark corner and beats me up with a length of lead pipe, then fine. I've never, ever, ever, ever had a problem with what people think. And now on social media, I really enjoy it. I love the tough love that I get. The rebrand of Changing Rooms, it absolutely, you know, brought everything back to the surface. And it was, you know, just a whole evening of delight. You know, I can remember lying in the bath, and I had the programme on with one eye, but I spent the whole time looking at my telephone, looking at these things coming through on, you know, second by second basis. What the fuck's he doing? He's such a wang. All this kind of stuff. It's just absolutely wonderful. Every now and again, there'd be one that was actually quite funny. There'd be a gem. And I decided, that with the last programme, I decided to reply to everybody because I think that's the nicest thing you can do, really. You know, and I was keeping it quite quick. So if someone said, that was an absolute fucking disaster, and I just replied to you, oh, well, that's a shame, because I was going for complete mess, but nevertheless. And, you know, very quickly, and it was hundreds and hundreds. And very quickly, I then started getting replies back from people to my reply, saying, oh, my God, I didn't realise you read that. I'm really sorry. I didn't really mean... It's just like, whoa. There's this strange kind of Klingon cloak of invisibility that people put on when, you know, when they're on social media. It's as if they really do transform into a higher being, I think. It's you know, it makes me love muggles even more. I don't see it as trolling. I see it as tough loving. It's great. I mean, I think the thing, but then again, I have always been quite kind of gung ho about it. I think if you're going to be so ungentlemanly as to be famous, then you've got to be able to cope with it. You know, when you become a celebrity, you're taken onto a large escarpment by the devil and told that, you know, you're going to be recognised by absolutely everybody up to the horizon. Are you ready for that? Are you prepared for that? You know, there's nowhere to hide from that. You've got to be entirely who you are. You've got to be completely bien dans sa peau. You've got to absolutely own you, because everybody's going to have an opinion. And I was quite lucky because I was born owning me. I don't know why, but I was born owning me. And I I'm 60, for goodness sake. It's all still working. It's fine. You should take great strength from people's criticism, I think. You can't dress flamboyantly and then scuttle home crying because everybody's looking at you. You know, that's the fucking point. Enjoy.
I think I'm going to listen to that story, or those stories, those anecdotes, every time that I am about to go on Twitter, because it would be a really nice pep talk of reminding me that, like, oh yeah, this is the world that I've entered, and actually, yeah, it is just sport, and it's daft.
Oh, it's complete sport.
When you were growing up, what were the big trends for you as a teenager, as a young person? And were you going in for the trends, or were you still doing your own thing?
I was playing my own. I mean, there was a point where I kind of managed to persuade my mother that I should be taken to Carnaby Street to get something trendy, which we did. And I think my father had died by then. You know, so it must have been extraordinary. I mean, I remember going shopping with my mother. I mean, she was a 1950s Ladybird book illustration with a hat and gloves in Carnaby Street with a probably 8-year-old who wanted velvet flares. And I got velvet flares, and I got a jacket with she-she's on it and stuff like that. And it's funny looking at the photographs, because nobody ever thought to upgrade the shoes. So they're still kind of a brown lace-up start rights at the end of it. That was about the only time, I think, that I kind of really got mainstream. I then went through a phase of having lots and lots of shirts and ties that matched, which always gave me great pleasure. And in fact, it's something that still gives me great pleasure. My current tailor, whose shirts are great, but he's lost his tie maker. He's had the absolute temerity to die. So I now no longer have anyone to make the matching ties, which is very, very difficult.
Yeah, of course. My thoughts and prayers are with you at this difficult time.
Thank you very much, indeed. Yes. You can see how tragic my world has become.
Did you have a rebellious phase when you were growing up? And would we have seen that in your clothing? Because it sounds like you were rebelling from the off, really.
I was born rebelling. Yeah, I mean, there was a rebellious phase, which when I first met Jackie, and I was at art school, this is in the 80s, and it was kind of like late Blitz and stuff like that, and I suddenly reincarnated as Sloane. That was probably my big rebellion, was when I had, when I actually cut my hair and wore corduroy trousers and a tweed jacket. But that, it was weird then, suddenly. Jackie and I would then turn up at these art school parties where, you know, it was very, very 80s, and I did look as if I'd just come from, you know, the 2-acre field. And in fact, that sort of was going on in the 80s. So you'd get, you know, Steve Strange or Boy George or Marilyn or whatever. I was obsessed by Deutsche Amerikanische Freundschaften and, you know, these very, very, very complicated German import people. But they had a different look every week. And sometimes that look would be absolutely bizarrely conventional. That would be a three-piece pinstripe suit or something. So that was a brief... I mean, it was a period that lasted long enough for me to have short hair in my wedding photographs, which is But when I say short, it wasn't, you know, it was Hugh Grant short. There was always a lot of flop. There just wasn't, you know, much party at the back.
I'd like to talk about the style that we associate you with now, which is incredibly rich. There's lots of texture, there's patterns, there's loads of colour. It's opulence, that's what I think of when I think of you. And tailoring as well. When did that start appearing?
When I became rich and when I stopped buying clothes from Kensington Market. More than anything, because I couldn't fit them. When I started transitioning into a middle-aged man. I did William Hunt for years, and William and I always got on very well. And he was very much behind the kind of the long jackets and the velvety thing and the quite big cuffs and stuff like that. And really, it was when we moved to the country that I then found that actually Barrington Air, who were in Cirencester, it's much more expensive having stuff bespoke, but it's just so much more comfortable. And then, you know, for the last 10 years, all the shows I've been doing in Asia and Australia, I was using tailors in Asia and Australia. I'm very happy now with the relationship I have with Barrington Air. He's unshockable when I send him, you know, 5.5 meters of my latest curtain collection and say, here, make this into a three-piece. He's fine.
Fantastic. Can I ask, do you think of, you mentioned your hair earlier, do you think of hair and makeup as part of the outfit?
No, not really. I mean, that is sort of, as far as I'm concerned, that's kind of left, that's nature, that's just sort of what it is. My eldest daughter is turning into a very successful makeup artist, and she's very much pioneering a bit of maquillage amongst the gentlemen of the homestead. Her husband is very good at his eyebrows and stuff like that. And obviously it's something that I wear on telly. Mm. But I think, you know, it's not something, I mean, even in all that new romantic stuff, it's not something that I ever really espoused, you know. And with my hair, I literally, that's my hair is my one kind of natural indulgence. That's something that doesn't really get any time, doesn't do well, other than, you know, I get it cut as often as I can. And obviously they have to spend an enormous amount of time dying in the grey. there's no real group. I mean, the beard was a thing. When I grew the beards like 10 years ago, more than anything, it's a free facelift. Because, you know, who knows what my jawline is doing underneath all this chinch. But Jackie always said that the only reason I grew a beard was because it was another thing to groom. It was to get over the fact that nature had forbidden me a tail, which I think is ridiculous. I would so fucking suit a tail. I would look after it. I would be great. It would be a foxy thing. And in fact, the show that I did in Asia, The Apartment, was massive, massive, massive. And I was this sort of very scary, quite camp panto judge thing, where they did do an enormous amount of guy liner, actually. Huge amount of guy liner and hand tattoos. Absolutely worth it if you can find it on YouTube. But I used to have to walk up and down in front of the... and then the one I was sending home, I smashed their star with a large hammer. I know. I mean, God, heaven. But they always used to say there was a guy in post-production that literally tried to convince the producers to put a tail on me in post-production because he felt it would really work if I was walking up and down and it was like flicking. But then it kind of relaxed. If I liked someone, it would then sort of relax.
Wow.
But then it would go back up again. I'm addicted to the idea now.
Yeah, of course, of course. I look forward to the next series of changing rooms to see you sort of, you know, accidentally knocking over vases with an enormous tail. Yeah.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale! Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
Years, are there any sort of items of clothing or trends that you've tried to pull off but is not really you?
I've never, you know, I've always stepped far aside. The minute those funny little monkey suits became a trend with their tiny lapels and their too short trousers, I'm not going anywhere near that, you know. And this is the joy of having everything made. It's just like, you know, Tom was saying, oh, well, we could start reducing the lapels if we want. Fuck off. You know, if everyone's going skinny, I want them so that they take people's eyes out. You know, I want, because actually I know that's better. Last thing I need is to be in a skin tight piece of Terrilyn, looking like Norman Wisdom. You know, the point about tailoring is it's a carapace. It is a back cape. You know, it's there to right all the fucking wrongs. And you know, I'm reasonably, like, I'm tallish. I've got quite broad shoulders, which is useful. Because it means that no matter how wide my mid gets, it's always still slightly in shadow. And so, you know, the point of tailoring is to draw attention to that, is to do all of those things. I mean, I remember when I got my first floral suit made up, I was actually working with Laura Ashley at the time. And for me, I was highly amused by it, because I could remember Scott Croller doing suits in the 80s in Laura Ashley fabric. And this was the 90s. I loved the decadence of being so deliberately anti-trend. But then there was this big fuss that year. David Bowie wore a floral suit at Glastonbury and he'd grown his hair long. And there was a lot of kind of, you know, oh, so you're doing a Bowie. You're going, I think you'll find Bowie's doing a, you
know. What a sentence.
That was a conversation that happened in my head, you know. Sadly, it's a conversation I never had with David Bowie and nobody really picked up on it either.
What's the oldest item of clothing that you have that you still love and wear?
All my boots are from Jeffrey West and they go on forever. I do keep an archive of suits. The older suits I will look at longingly and remember the snake-hipped Phoebe that used to wear that suit and think, oh, well, I could probably get a thigh in it. Albion, he's six, but he's seriously into clothes when he gets beyond Marvel. I do feel I need to provide him with a bit of an arc on the edited highlights.
Oh, love that. What a treasure chest to know that that's there in the wings waiting. That's so exciting. Is there an era that you wish you existed in for the clothes alone?
I am super happy with now. Always have been. I think anyone that you know, hankers after a different era is stupid. Just work with what you've got. Traditionally, with that question, you know, like 10 or 15 years ago, I'd say, well, you know, for goodness sake, you know, if I went back to the Jordan period, they'd all look like me. I think things are a bit different now. I think certainly young men are a lot more groomed. I don't think they're quite hitting the heights of my extravagance. But certainly things have changed. I mean, you mentioned it earlier about, you know, gender fluidity. Well, it's not even a gender fluidity. It's more to do with you know, freeing up. It's just escaping the absolute appalling, ghastly rigor mortis of the 20th century. That was the problem. The 20th century was appalling for any kind of style or design. You look back at it, it was all fucking designed by Oliver Cromwell. There's nothing indulgent, nothing nice to it. You get these moments, but of course the moments of revolution. So the 70s or even the 80s, these are moments where you smash through what everybody else is doing. What men were wearing in the 70s was actually pretty straightforward, understated morning wear in the 1770s. So, you know, but we were literally, society was denied anything nice for all of the fucking 20th century, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I was used to say that, it put me and Jamie Oliver at the end of the 18th century, Jamie Oliver would never get a shag. Because, you know, any Jane Austen heroine looking at Jamie Oliver would go, really? You know, what the fuck's that scruff bucket? You know, has he come to empty the, you know, has he come to empty the close stool? Because, you know, actually sportswear, trainers and stubble, you know, that basically just looks like low self-esteem as far as I'm concerned, which I think it is.
Do you have a favourite item of clothing, and this can be a genre of clothing or an actual physical item, that you put on and you just instantly feel fantastic in?
That is literally my entire wardrobe.
What a great answer.
I mean, it's literally my entire... I mean, that makes me feel... I mean, this is a wonderful experience for me, because it now makes me feel that I've achieved a state of wardrobe nirvana, because there's nothing in there that feels special like that. You know, there's nothing in there that feels lucky like that. You know, there are things that feel different. You know, if I'm putting on a full three-piece suit and a shirt and a tie and a this and a that, you know, that feels very different to wearing this. But, you know, that doesn't feel better and it doesn't feel worse. And nothing changes. There's stuff that's more eveningy, perhaps. And, I mean, actually, sometimes... I enjoy that moment of understatement. Sometimes I like the girls, the granddaughters who had their christening a couple of weeks ago, and I wore a very dark navy blue suit, three-piece suit, which has this sort of big check on it, and a white shirt and a navy blue tie. And I loved the kind of kinky understatement of it. I really enjoyed the kinky understatement of it. And it was funny because people's reaction was different as well. There was something quite powerful about the understatement. I'm very aware of the fact that, you know, I am the panto dame in all of this. I've always been terribly happy about this. I mean, I've never, you know, never wanted to be significant in my wardrobe or lifestyle choices whatsoever. I've always been very happy to be teased and ridiculed by everybody about it, because it's sort of like, it's my choice and it's me. And, you know, I'm never doing it for anybody else. And this is, I did a big series for Radio 4 and dandies years and years ago. And one of my conclusions was the fact there's a big difference between a dandy and a fop. A fop is someone who dresses for other people. A fop is someone who dresses to impress other people. They'll change. They'll be constantly fiddling with what they wear. They'll be very insecure about what they wear. A dandy dresses for themselves. And you might have to do a Beau Brummel. It might take 3 hours first thing in the morning, but you're dressed. And so therefore you stay dressed. You don't change. That's it. You know, whether it's appropriate or not appropriate, it doesn't matter. You can go on a country hike. You know, you can go brass rubbing. You can go and have tea with the Queen. All of that is a perfect expression of you, which means that it doesn't actually need to evolve or change throughout the day. And I think there is something, dandyism is about confidence. Absolutely, it is about confidence. And it is absolutely about bien dans sa peau. And it was interesting doing a sort of getting to know a series of historical dandies. And there's a very strong, for a start, dandies are largely predominantly heterosexual, which I think people are quite surprised about. There's certainly a lot of heterosexuality there. I mean, Byron, you know, definitely played for both sides. But I think, you know, it was part of the pose. And actually, he was also very scruffy. You know, dandyism doesn't have to be absolutely polished and evolved. You know, Beckham is a phenomenal dandy, but half the time he looks dreadful, you know, in a very kind of studied way, in a very kind of obvious way. And the other thing is that it often goes with quite a kind of a sharp tongue, quite a kind of a rapier way. I mean, you know, Oscar Wilde is obviously a great, you know, gay icon. But then, you know, he also was very, very in love with his wife. And he was a very studied dandy and had a very, very quick wit. And you find this with so many of them. So many of them. The other one was fascinating, Edward VIII, as in, you know, the king we never had. He was an incredible dandy, and I think more so as he got older as well. And he, you know, and there is someone that was supposed to be very much holding up the kind of the establishment ideas of, you know, what you wore and what you didn't wear. And he was constantly pushing it, constantly pressing. And he looked great. He looked absolutely great.
I'm going to dig out that series because it sounds right up my street. And my partner's street. He's very into dandies, very into all that.
Yeah.
That's going to be a great list.
It was really interesting. And but of course, the big thing that came out, as just about everything I've now discovered, left, right and centre on planet Earth, is that the 20th century killed anything interesting. It was absolutely a plague, a blight, on all style in every single direction and area. You know, we are emerging from that stone. We are crawling out from underneath that rock.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Sound the gifting panic alarm. You need to get an amazing gift. Wait, no, the perfect gift. Relax. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting, so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. It's easy. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like. And Gift Mode instantly gives you curated gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. Now it's simple to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life. So whether you need a housewarming gift for the new homeowner or a birthday present for the pickleballer, Gift Mode has you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
I want to ask you what your relationship was like with shopping. Are you someone who can do it online? Do you want to touch those things? You know, do you want to feel them?
Or... No, well, I mean, again, yeah, I mean, I don't, darling, I don't shop. Shopping's for mortals. No, because I don't. I mean, I literally, you know, anything, well, you know, the carbohydrate, the pants and socks, absolutely. It's a button you press and they arrive and they all match and you get rid of the old ones. But with clothes, you know, I tell, you know, whichever tailor to get on and do whatever I want. I mean, it's you know, it comes from me. I mean, and again, this is a very 20th century idea that you have to buy what somebody else has made for you.
Mm.
Up until the 20th century with mass production and goodness knows what, you know, you always had a tailor. Everyone had a tailor. You know, if you didn't have a tailor, then you just wore the clothes that you'd inherited from, you know, someone richer and posher than you and had been on several different bodies. But, you know, you always made your own trends. You know, your tailor would advise you, by all means, or your dressmaker or whatever. I mean, there's a level of control there that can go horribly wrong. I think sometimes Princess Anne maybe took that power a little bit too seriously. But then in hindsight, we look back and go, actually, she looked fucking cool.
Yeah.
You know, there was an excess to sort of some of the stuff that she did, which no one would dream of doing in the right mind at the time. But now, you know, now looking back at the vintage of it, those enormous balloon sleeves and, you know, kind of big, kind of, you know, ruffly necklines and things like that. It was absolutely brilliant.
As you're getting stuff made for you, I wondered what your relationship was like with secondhand stuff and vintage. And is that something that you go in for? Have you got anything that you own of great age?
Fuck off. Why would I want... It's like wearing somebody else's, you know, kind of foot scrapings, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, vintage, wearing somebody else's clothes, as I say, that's literally what paupers did, you know, because you had to. You take the suit off the guy in the coffin, because why waste a good suit? Why on earth would I want to sit in somebody else's bum juice?
Hold on. You wore an army surplus rubber Mac, so at some point...
Oh, yeah, well, that was... For sure, that was the 80s. I mean, where else can you get it from? And I mean, actually, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I absolutely pioneered it in the 80s. I mean, I remember I got quite friendly with the guy that started Flip. And yeah, this is absolutely what you did back then. But not in that world anymore, dear.
Okay, let's talk about the future then. Do you see your style evolving furthermore as you get older? Or do you think, oh no, I found, this is me?
Okay, I'm going to sort of flip that round a bit. What I will never do is be one of those old people that doesn't have new clothes because it's a waste because I'm going to die soon. And that, you know, and I think that'll extend across my life as well. I mean, I'm literally going to be wearing new things, buying new things, having new things because they're for me and because... You know what? I'm fucking worth it. What I'm not going to be doing is, you know, you get melting into this beige old age, which is all about, you know, comfort and practicality. Still, what I wear, I want to hurt slightly. That's what shows me that I'm still alive. If the children were so appalled when we were, going on holiday or whatever, and Jackie and I would be in first, and they'd be in business. I mean, I'm not Gordon Ramsay. You know, they'd be so appalled about the fact that I wasn't wearing the pyjamas that they provide, and I didn't use the kind of the flatbed and all this kind of stuff, because I quite like sitting up straight wearing a tie listening to cello music. I can do that in first class as well as anywhere else. So, yeah, no, I think comfort is a word that I despise more than anything. It makes my lip curl. Whenever anybody wears something and you go, right, well, that's hideous. And they go, yeah, but it's comfortable, isn't it? It's just like, is that enough? Is that literally enough? You know, your body might be comfortable. What about your soul? You know? So, yes, I'm going to be one of those old men that's sort of corseted and, you know, barely able to move, still be in my Cuban heels despite the corns. I'm getting a corn, which I'm really fascinated by. Almost scientific delight in watching this thing. So this is what it's like to grow old.
Are there any trends that you're hoping that you never have to look at again?
Well, the 20th century. I mean, it's quite a big trend. I'll give you that. That literally, I mean, obviously in my field, my absolute, I'd say nemesis, but that gives it too much power, is mid-century modern, which is, you know, absolutely the height of Mies van der blah blah. But that kind of sartorial attitude as well. I would love to look out at a world where young people are dressing in a much more self-esteem expressing fashion. But then having said that, I look out of my manor house windows into my courtyard and I see my children and their husbands, and that's exactly what they look like. So that's fine. In my world, my little walled city state, my little fraction of the Cotswolds, actually we have a lovely, it's a lovely place to be. It's like a whole fucking costume drama going on there, only without the drama.
It sounds idyllic. Last question. It could be a sad one, but it's meant to be joyous. What would your final outfit be, as in to be buried or cremated in, or shot into the sky?
Well, I've just said, so again, right, we're now into the end game, to the extent that there are conversations going on about funeral plans. And, you know, I think I took everyone a bit by surprise, because I think they were expecting enormous draped catafalques and midnight funerals and, you know, me draped in papal kind of damask and stuff like that. But I actually do now really genuinely feel, as an Epicurean, that, you know, the sooner I am reunited with the atoms swirling around the cosmos, the better. And that since none of it is going to be very nice, since coffins now are disgusting, since shrouds are revolting, since funerals are appalling, since memorial services are the absolute height of bad taste, I literally want to die, be put in a wheelbarrow, and then just burnt more or less instantly, with absolutely no memorial, no memorializing, no coffin, and no final outfit.
Naked.
Naked, absolutely, which I think is an incredibly kind of early medieval way of doing it. But, you know, absolutely, why fuck around? It's not going to, you know, it's not going to buy me a place in immortality. I just want to be recycled as quickly as possible.
Gorgeous. I mean, also the ultimate suit is the birthday suit as well. I can, it's all come round.
Fuck, that's good. Oh my God. I might have to have it sort of taken in.
There you go. Episode 1 of series 3 of Who You Wearing. It's Lawrence Dwellin-Bowen. What a slice of charm and fun that man is. Oh my God, get him a tail. The guy deserves it. Do you know what? I was really taken with what Lawrence Fallon Bowen... It feels weird to say other thing other than full naming him, by the way. It really struck me... You know when he was saying that he wears the same thing that he wakes up to something that evening? Pretty much, he's kind of dressed for anything and there's no saving it for best in his wardrobe and there's not even a favourite item because it's all his favourite. And that, I was like, that's it. That's what I'm working towards. Just... proper, you know, Marie Kondo of like what sparks joy. I want everything I own to spark joy. And you know what, actually, because I've started in the last couple of years running these events called Swap Don't Shops. You can find that on Insta. I think it's swap_don't_shop_. I also bang about it all the time on my Insta as well. There's swap events. So you come along, you swap clothes, you get some back. Really feel good, but also it's made me really think about what's in my wardrobe. Do I wear that? Do I want it? Is that still me? Do I love it? And I'm trying to whittle it down so I love everything I own. It's just made me a lot more mindful about the stuff that I have, and helped me let go of stuff that I'm not, you know, that I'm just holding on to. I'm like, what for? Like, what rainy day? Or, you know, what gastric illness am I hoping I suddenly get and fit into that even? And also seeing other people take it home and be so happy is, I mean, that's the great thing. Like, bit, you know, when people are carrying around your item of clothing and you're like, I love that. I had so much fun in that. Oh, it's just a really lovely thing. Yeah, you should come to them. We do them all over the country. Anyway, it really sort of... hit home what he was talking about and that relationship with our clothing. We should love everything. And if you're sat here now looking at your wardrobe and thinking, I don't love this, then maybe it's time to let it go. Now, I always talk about an indie business that I want to sort of champion that I feel like is in my head when I'm listening back to the episodes, or even when I'm recording the episodes in my head, I'm like, oh, I've got to pair it with these, like this business with this person, perfect. And I have been wanting to talk about this particular business for ages. I mean, it's Black-owned, it's a Welsh indie business, but it's been hard to find the perfect person to pair it with. And I found it. It's LLB. I actually quite like LLB. That's a bit better than full naming. because they're similar. They're timeless, they're modern, they're classic, all at the same time. They're extra. And, you know, do a great line of beautiful tailoring. So... guys, please get to know our indie of the week. It is Nathan Palmer Bespoke. So they're based in the very cute town of Penarth in South Wales. And Nathan has helped people, I mean, all over the country, all over the world, feel their best at special events. He specialises in custom-made, exquisitely fitted occasion wear for all genders. Now, I am aware when I'm doing this, I normally recommend an indie... you know, based on things I think you will go out and wear. And I know that recommending a designer who's all over red carpets isn't the most accessible recommendation, but I want you to go and find and follow him. There's some beautiful testimonials there on people who've had something gorgeous tailor-made for a loved one's funeral. So, you know, like there are, I understand that occasion wear might feel a bit niche, but I honestly just want to talk about him so much. His work is incredible. So he's Nathan Palmer Bespoke, all one word lowercase, on Instagram. His work ethic is amazing. His designs are absolutely next level. You will see it is that perfect thing of like, that looks like it's been here forever, but it was also what the future looks like. I just wanted to shout about him. His designs are really exciting, inspiring, and he's really helping to put Wales on the map in the fashion stakes. And he organises these massive galas with celebrities walking the runway. Go and check out the look that he put together for a previous guest and icon, H from Steps. Oh gosh, there's tailoring, there's tulle, it's stunning. And he also raised a ton of money for 10 of Us Cancer at this event, and is so good at using his platform to amplify other independent designers as well. I'm honestly so excited by his work, and I think you will be too. So go and have a gander at what he's making. And maybe you've got something coming up and you want something beautiful made just for you, you know, that works with the designer's vision, with your vision. I think Nathan Palmer is the guy to go to. Now, if you want to get in touch with the podcast,
as I mentioned at the beginning. Maybe you want to talk about your clothing tales, recommendations for guests. Who knows, it might pay off in 18 months like it did for Evie. Maybe you just want to share your thoughts on an episode. We'd love to hear from you. You can email whoyouwearingpod@gmail.com, and you can also follow us on Insta at whoyouwearingpod. I'm going to be back next week with another indie business recommendation and another fantastic guest. How fantastic? Well, it is a woman I'm endlessly impressed with. I've been told a lot that we look alike. She is talented. I'm so flattered by that. She is so talented. She's really funny. She's very wise. And she's got a badass wardrobe. It is the original pop idol herself. I'm speaking to Michelle McManus. It is amazing conversation. If you don't love her already, you're going to love her after this. See you then.
Who Are You Wearing is produced by Joe Southard, the artwork is by Mary Phillips, and the music is by Annie Glass. This has been a Little Wonder production.